Hello, everyone, and welcome to the final show for the 2013 championship season for the MLB.com Fantasy 411. Mike Ciano, Corey Stats-Schwartz, coming to you live on the podcast show Grand Extravaganza.
Plausibly live.
The Goose and the crew on the other side of the glass. You can follow the Goose at ZachMLB. He also does an amazing job on the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com. I think a top five blog this year for the Goose.
Oh, yeah?
In the pro blogs, you know, the pro blogs, which is just as impressive.
Yeoman's work
by the Goose. You get your pitcher ditch. You get your two-star pitchers, which, by the way, you will not get this week.
You might get a one-star pitcher. On Monday.
And you get your questions answered. And, by the way, today is all fantasy team and fan appreciation day. So we'll be taking a bunch of questions after we unveil our all fantasy team. We unveiled the all surprise and all disappointment team on the last show. You can find that on the blog. Also, we're going to put player rankings out on the blog. What else? So, I'm missing something. No?
You know what I'll do next week also is I'll run up a quick and dirty list of 12 for next year.
There you go. I can bang that out next week. We just made some more fantasy history just now just by winging it.
Right, exactly. Just, you know, that's just train of thought.
I like that Under Armour thing you wear.
Thanks. I got it from Sloan Sports Athletic Conference. Sports analytics.
I was going to say, what are you doing at a sports athletic conference?
Auditing.
You can follow Corey at Schwartzstops for political and heavy metal musings at the Cap 23, even though I really haven't been tweeting much lately. I've just been kind of enjoying the ride. Yep. But I did tweet out on Fantasy 411, the general account, the other night, Giambino. Nice. That was me. That was all me, Goose. Don't take any credit for that one. We have some news and notes at the end of the show. We have some thank yous to throw out there from the Friday show when Corey and JB were having on special guests all season long. So we'll get to all that. But first, any thoughts from the previous couple of days?
It's been exciting. You know, look, just so the people who, you know, maybe are a little bit new to the podcast, we tout the guys on our teams. I mean,
Pretty bad timing getting in at the last show.
You never know. It's never too late. You know, but we talk about the guys we have on our teams. We do what we say we're going to do. And my NFBC team had a sick week last week. At one point, I was up 109 to 101. Gave back a couple of points over the last couple of days just in some tight categories. The guy in second place yesterday alone had 6 homers and 20 RBIs.
I know that feeling.
In one day. So I went from up 8 at one point to I'm up a point and a half now. He's almost maxed out, so it's really up to me. I've got 6 starting pitchers going in the last 3 days. I get Ellsbury back in the lineup tomorrow night. I'm putting in Eduardo Nunez over Cody Ash to try and tweak my utility spot. My team is on the floor, so flags fly forever. I got 3 and a half days to go.
All right.
To hoist the Jolly Roger.
Till you bring me out to Blue Smoke for lunch.
Till we have the Yoo-hoo shower, and yes, indeed, you will see pictures. Because if I win, I do the Yoo-hoo shower.
Don't duck what I just said.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Although technically you didn't help me this year. So
I helped you supportive-wise.
Right,
I prayed for you.
When I looked down.
I lit candles for you every time I went near a church.
When there was only one set of footprints in the sand, that's when you were carrying me.
I know
you hate that.
Every time I walked by you and Corey in his little cubicle.
It's office, buddy.
Whatever.
Okay. You have a cubicle.
No, I don't even have a cubicle. I have a set of desks.
You have an open-faced sandwich
desk. That's right, exactly. Hot open roast beef sandwich desk with cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes. Corey sits with his back to everybody because, you know, that's how he is. That's how he prefers to roll. So every time I walk by you, though, I go, come on, Corey, you could do it today.
You're vibing me?
I just send you positive energy granola.
Yeah.
Through my brain.
I appreciate it.
Mind bullets.
I was feeding on it.
I feed you mind bullets.
From 50 yards.
I've decided not to kill yaks with my mind bullets, but instead get you the NFBC.
Shoot down my negative thoughts.
NFBC championship so I can get free Blue Smoke.
All right.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Anyway.
Drum roll.
Drum roll, please. Okay. All fantasy team for 2013. So we have our starters and we have some honorable mentions, yes?
Let's do this.
Okay. So I don't think any surprise here at catcher. You know, I was thinking about this last night, looking over what the selections were, and you know, I'm kind of wondering when you're going to get some serious talk about a Hall of Fame career from this guy, and maybe it already has. And that's Yadi Molina of the Cardinals, 315 average, 12 homers, 75 ribbies. Hey, 3 steals. But, you know, listen, for it's hard to get these days anything out of a catcher, whether it's injuries and turnover and all that, and this guy is just consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this was actually the closest call of the entire team.
Yeah, there was some good years.
Jonathan Lucroy and Willen Rosario had slightly better power numbers. Mm-hmm. Lucroy with 82 RBIs, Rosario with 21 homers. And Lucroy had 7 steals. And when you get 7 steals out of a catcher, that is humongous production. I mean, that's what's made Russell Martin valuable for all these years. Mm-hmm. Getting those steals where you don't expect them. But ultimately, Yadi leads the position in batting average, mm-hmm. leads in run, 12 homers, 75 RBIs. And I think ultimately, if you want to be the king, you got to beat the king.
Right.
And it's not that these guys, you know, maybe by some rating systems were marginally, fractionally ahead. It was every ranking I checked, every objective ranking gave me a different order. Mm. But ultimately, it came down to Yadi was the first guy you took out of these three. He earned it. He did it for you. So honorable mentions to Lucroy and Rosario, but Yadi's the guy.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Rosario because obviously, you know, he is the catcher now. There was a little, you know, the past year or so, there was, you know, a little share going on there or whatever, and you wondered what was going to happen. And now, obviously, he is the guy, and he's in Colorado. It's still going to be thin air there next year. Has he jumped up very high and become a real big player in this game? I think he has. I had him in NL only this year, and I loved him.
Yeah, he'll go higher in drafts next year than he did this year because I think he was still a little bit under the radar mm-hmm. coming into this year, even though he hit 28 homers last
right.
year. What's surprising to me is that he hit 292
yep.
with a 109-15 strikeout to walk rate. Now, Joe Sheehan has done some great work on this in his newsletter, writing about how you have to sort of recalibrate your thinking to what's an acceptable strikeout to walk rate because we are in something of a pitching error right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, everybody strikes up.
But to hit 292 with a 7-1 strikeout to walk rate is mind-boggling to me. So I think he'll be in the second five.
What was his BABIP?
Yeah.
You got his BABIP.
But here's the thing also. A higher fly ball rate, which usually translates to better power,
sure.
usually translates with a slightly lower BABIP.
Yes.
So 292 is surprising, but look, you do it back-to-back years. We got to take it seriously.
All right. He was the surprise player for the – he was the surprise first baseman for the all-surprise team, I should say. And, of course, he is the all-fantasy winner at first base, and that, of course, is Chris Davis. Even though Paul Goldschmidt had a sick, sick year, you know, you got to give it to Chris Davis here. 52 homers, 137 RBIs, 285 average, 102 runs. But it is really interesting if you cover up home runs, how different this looks at first base.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, let me just read you Goldschmidt's line.
Sure.
303, 102 runs, 36 homers, 124 RBIs, 15 steals. That's like in the running for player of the year most years.
Mm-hmm.
But that just goes to show what a great year Davis had. But I will say this, on draft day next year, I'd be willing to bet, not that I'm a betting man.
I understand.
I'd bet a tuna sandwich, let's say.
Okay.
Or whatever your lunch meat is of choice. Goldschmidt goes ahead of Davis in 100% of fantasy leagues.
I don't know about 100 because I think.
A high percentage.
I think a very high percentage.
Yes.
I would give you at least 90% plus.
And the reason is, I'll give you two reasons. Goldschmidt, 15 steals. Davis, only 4. Just like
right.
we talked about with the catchers, that little gravy
yep.
of steals. For Goldschmidt, 99 walks, 143 strikeouts. Davis has 198 strikeouts against 70 walks. Now, just like we said with Rosario, Davis has proven, and there are a lot more data points to support, that you can maintain a good average with that kind of strikeout-to-walk rate, especially when you have that kind of power. Because guess what? Those 52 homers are all hits. They
right.
count towards the batting average.
Oh.
But I think Goldschmidt is the guy
something.
That, you know, Davis you look at and you're like, no way he does this again. No way. Goldschmidt, you look at it, you're like, not only can I see him doing this again.
Getting better.
I still see ceiling.
Yep. I agree. I think so. You know, you wonder, though, here's the problem with...
Upside, I should say.
Yes, I knew what you meant. Here's
Thanks.
The problem with tacking on percentages and that, why I think... I agree with you, and I think it should be 100%. Yeah, but nothing's 100% in life. But still, how many people that play fantasy, and no offense to them, but how many people that play fantasy are just going... Let me ask you this. This is the real question. When you go into your, let's assume everybody drafts online for a minute, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into your CBS, ESPN, Yahoo draft room.
Last year's stats or this year's projections.
So,
right, yeah.
Right, so who's going to be ranked higher?
Yeah, it's going to be close.
I'm asking, I mean, there is a chance Goldschmidt is because he is the more complete player. But so are there millions of people out there that play fantasy baseball that are just going to sort by home runs,
yeah.
see 52, and think that's the better player?
Yeah, and I mean, he's 20% ahead of the next guy in home runs almost.
So that's why you can't give 100%.
Crazy.
because I think, you know, people have drafting habits and then just people that are enjoying fantasy. Mm-hmm. Maybe they play one league of friends and family league. They're not really, you know, thinking about it as much and looking at the big picture. So it's hard to say. So while I agree that you're right, and that's probably that it should be that, I'm not sure.
It'll be extremely close. Let's call it that.
Can we look that up after? Well, I guess we have ADP, obviously. But that's not a big, big sample size.
What, for next year?
For next year, after drafts are over. I'm just curious.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Okay. Next year we can.
Make a note. Go set a meeting maker.
For April 1st. All right, go ahead.
All right, third base, no surprise, Miguel Cabrera. I really would have loved to see this guy play more than 146 games. Well, he'll end up playing like 150-ish. But I would like to see him play some more games and, you know, see where he would have landed. Do you think he would have hit 50 homers?
Yeah. Miguel Cabrera came into the month of September with 43 homers and 130 RBIs. He was Fantasy Player of the Year with a month to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like Josh Hamilton that year.
And he's done nothing in September. The guy's been banged up. And look, eventually he had to cool off. This is the one position, though, where I didn't even bother coming up with an honorable mention. There are other guys who had good years. Yeah. But what's the point? You know, Miguel Cabrera, I think it's no surprise we can just say right now, Fantasy Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. All right, Davis has 8 more homers. They have the identical number of RBIs. Yep. Miggy has 1 more run. Davis has 1 more steal. And Miggy has a 60-point edge in batting average.
Unbelievable. 30 less at-bats.
Right.
I'm actually surprised it's that close. I thought it'd be a little lower.
It cost him 11 games. Miggy missed a lot of playing time.
But I thought he missed more, actually.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, Davis, phenomenal year. You know, on value, probably the Fantasy Player of the Year. But Miggy, you know, mm-hmm. when you're a consensus top 3 pick. You know, we talked about this before, and we'll talk about this with one of our all fantasy outfielders. Ron Chandler's made an excellent point that if you look at it traditionally over the last 10, 15 years, the guy who goes number 1 overall almost never returns first round value.
Right.
Not only does he not earn number 1, he doesn't even return top 15 value. Miggy this year was a consensus top 3 player. Mm-hmm. I got him 3rd in NFBC. He went number 1 in other leagues, whatever.
And the other two were Braun and Trout.
Right. And he returned top 3 value.
Yep.
Unbelievable. All right, let's move on.
All right. Robinson Cano is our second baseman with honorable mention to Matt Carpenter, who made the all-surprise team, and Jason Kipnis, who is a fan favorite here at the Fantasy 411. You know, now you wonder for Cano's future value. You know, is he going to become the Tony Campbell of the New York Yankees next year? And that's how he'll get his number. And listen, in total fairness, for the most part, he was this year. He kind of was this year. He really had no supporting cast in that lineup. A bunch of, you know, a bunch of hobos, you know, around them. And no offense, but Lyle Overbay, Vernon Wells, you know, Travis Hafner. I mean, you
let's face it, last year Ichiro was that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, but he went out and he produced. When he had a chance to hit, he hit.
Not a lot to say about him. I mean, he is a clockwork orange of hitting 315, 27 homers. You know, the runs scored were down this year, but you have to give a pass for the lineup around him. But he managed 106 RBIs with that lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's amazing. You know, we'll see where he plays next year, but for this year, clear-cut number one. Matt Carpenter, 321, better average, 125 runs.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
I mean, that is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, but homers, RBIs, steals, no comparison. Cano's the guy.
Yeah, of course. And then Jason Kipnis, a great year. Big, big fan of Kipnis, and I'm glad he finally had his year where he lived up to kind of expectations and what he cost on draft day for the most part with 278, 17 homers, 81 RBIs. 81 runs, 29 steals.
You know, it's interesting, though. If you look at Kipnis last year and Kipnis this year, the stat lines are almost identical.
Yeah.
The difference is that last year it was a huge first half and a terrible second half.
Right.
This year he was more consistent. So I think we've established a baseline for him now. And there is some upside growth there.
Absolutely. Very good point. That's right. Because last year his second half was just so atrocious. But I forgot what a huge first half he had.
Yep.
Gene Segura is our shortstop with honorable mentions to my boy Ian Desmond, who gets that 2020 plateau again, and Elvis Andrus, who went 41 steals with a 271 average. Interesting that, you know, Andrus, what do you think about Andrus' runs?
Yeah, 87 runs, and that's, you know, a big reason here in an honorable mention. 41 runs is a nice bounce back. He didn't run much last year. He ran again this year. Segura, 74 runs. Desmond, 76. You wouldn't think he is, you know, Elvis Andrus. That's a full point in the standings, 87 runs. 4 homers, 67 RBIs. Not a power guy, but 67 RBIs is pretty good for a little pop hitter. Out of all these guys, these three, I think Desmond is the guy who goes first of the three next year. Mm-hmm. Segura, again, kind of like Kipnis last year, huge first half, not as good second half. You know, I tend to think the 12 homers, he doesn't repeat that again. I think he can hit in the 280s, 290s with 40-plus steals. But if it's only six or seven homers, then basically you're looking at Elvis Andrus.
Yeah, and an interesting thing with Desmond is, you know, back-to-back 20-homer years now, after wondering, is this guy ever going to hit for power? Because in 2010 and 2011, he totaled 18 homers, and he played 154 games. Then he had his power outburst last year, but also missed a bunch of time. But this year he gets to the 2020. You know, is he just a 2020 guy, you know, who can hit at least 280 every year? Is that his – and do you see upside for that?
Well, he's right around his peak age. I think he's 26 or 27. You know, not a great strikeout to walk rate, so mm-hmm. you wonder if that will affect his batting average. But that's the thing that we've learned, is that if you've got good power, that somewhat offsets the weak strikeout to walk ratio, because the home runs are hits. They count as hits. That's right. Doubles power. Those are hits. It's not just singles. So I think this is definitely a baseline for him. I think he'll be one of the top shortstops off the board next year. I think, you know, Hanley will be number one again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think Desmond is solidly in that second tier now.
He just turned 28.
Still got some peak time left.
Right side of 30, kid.
Right side.
Still plenty of time to go.
Yep.
All right, outfield, just a very nice, solid group here for our all-outfield team. Beautiful. Mike Trout, Jacoby Ellsbury. Happy to see you back, Jacoby. And Andrew McCutchen, who really had a very, very interesting year. I mean, I remember on draft day this year being like, you know, McCutchen, another guy who suffered last year, put up some numbers but then really didn't. And he just went out and had a very, you know, slow start, right? Extremely slow start, if I'm remembering right, and then just hit a stride and never broke stride for the most part.
Yeah, and you know, the question with McCutchen coming into this year is what kind of power. I didn't buy him as a 31 homer hitter last year. I had him in Tout Wars. I thought it was a career year for power. And you can say as of now it was, because he's back down to 20.
Right.
But he ran again, 27 steals, hit for a 318 average. So he, you know, he traded back some power for the high average, 95 runs, 83 RBIs. There are four other honorable mentions that I'll just rattle them off quickly, but then I want to get back to Trout and Ellsbury. Adam Jones, Hunter Pence, Alex Rios, Carlos Gomez. All these guys had, you know, similar seasons in terms of value, but what set McCutchen apart was the extremely high batting average and the balance of categories. You know, Jones with more power, Pence with a little bit more power, Rios with 40 steals, shocker to me, and Carlos Gomez, I mean, 280, 23 homers, 37, but McCutchen, just the all-around game. Wins it for him. He's a first-round player, definitely. Ellsbury, great bounce-back year for him. Didn't validate the power, but again, he's going to end up missing 25 games due to injuries.
Yep.
Got back in the lineup yesterday, 299, so with a good weekend, he'll top 300. He would have blown by 100 runs if not for the injuries.
Yep.
8 homers and 52 RBIs, not great, but let's give him, let's say, 10 and 62 if not for the injuries. He's going to lead the major leagues in steals after missing almost a month with injuries.
Yep.
That really shows you what kind of impact he had this year. You know, he would have topped 60 steals easily, and it doesn't sound like a lot because we grew up on Vince Coleman and guys like that.
Sure.
But in this day and age, everybody gets 10, 20 steals. Guys don't get 60 anymore. And Ellsbury did it. Phenomenal year for him. I think he'll be a late first rounder next year, depending on where he signs. And finally, the last shall be first. You know, I'm not going to pick on Ron, because Ron is one of the legends in the industry. He pointed out some very, very valid concerns about Mike Trout coming in this year. And I think a lot of people had those concerns about Trout. And ultimately where everybody settled in was, if Trout drops to me in the middle of the first round or late first round, I'm going to go for it. All he did was basically earn top three value once again. 324 batting average, 108 runs, 26 homers, 92 steals. The only area you could say was a slight disappointment was the 33 steals. It's 92 ribbies and 33 steals, sorry.
Right.
But, I mean, like, a 30-30 guy who can lead the league in batting average, 100 runs, 100 RBIs, you know, you add it up, it's exactly 200, 105 walks.
Yeah, I know.
Phenomenal, crazy. Phenomenal all-around player. I think going into next season, I would take him over Miggy, number one.
Okay. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if we always used to, it's funny. I remember years ago, you know, not too long ago, because we were talking about Shin-Soo Choo, and we were talking about, I can't remember who the other player was, but this was all pre-Trout for sure. And we were like, man, if you can get me a
2020-100
guy,
yeah,
right? A 2020-100 guy.
First rounder.
That's amazing. And now you can get a 300-30-30 100-100 guy, that's just astronomical.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to do.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And again, you know, the Angels also had a lot of lineup problems this year. Pujols struggled, out with an injury, didn't even play 100 games. Josh Hamilton, huge disappointment. Mm-hmm. You know, Howie Kendrick had a nice year at second base but missed a long time with the knee problem. Then you had Eric Ibar, very disappointing year. You know, the fact that Trout started out as the leadoff hitter and then ended up as the number three hitter tells you two things. Number one, the Angels season didn't go as planned. Number two, it tells you that this guy is a great player.
Yes.
That's a significant jump from one to three. So, you know, anybody wants to take Miggy number one next year, I get it. But you've got to feel at this point how he can't possibly get any better. Whereas Trout, you look at it and like, would it shock you if he hit 330 with 35 homers and 40 steals next year?
No.
Would that shock you at all?
No, not at all.
You know?
I wonder, you know, the one thing that's going to be really interesting to look at next year is, okay, let's just say Trout is the consensus number one overall.
All right.
You know, how do you pair him? Like, what do you, you know, because you have to wait so long. You know, and that's why I like the strategy of, and I wish every league did this, I really do. If I was the god of fantasy drafting, like I could have my way and enforce my will, mm-hmm. I would do Kentucky Derby style drafting, which for those of you who don't know is you pick out of a hat and that's where you get to pick your spot.
Right.
So if I pick out of a hat, if somebody picks my name out of a hat first, I don't have to take the number one pick. I can take the fifth, I can take the 12th.
Right.
I can do whatever I want.
Right.
And then so on and so forth. And I just wonder, looking at, you know, how important is it to get Mike Trout based on
who
you're going to get on back on the wheel?
I was just having that conversation this morning with Doug, with our buddy Doug Cassidy.
Whoa.
This was the first, usually in NFBC, which has KDS, mm-hmm. I would usually go for somewhere around 12, 13, because I wanted to be around the wheel in the first round and get two great players.
Right.
This was the first year that I ever shot for a top pick in KDS. My first choice was three, because out of Trout, Braun, and Cabrera, I wanted whichever guy fell.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be Cabrera. Very happy with that.
Sure.
I was kind of expecting Trout in a way, but it's not like I'm complaining.
Right.
Next year, I'm going for top two. Maybe top three if I decide I would take Goldschmidt third overall. But
so if you're at four, you're going to the wheel in the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, and look, my mind may change about this as we get in next year. You know, Andrew McCutchen, Carlos Gonzalez, Cano, guys like that may look better in my mind.
Right.
You know, I might like Goldschmidt at four if I think he'll slip there. Somebody might like Chris Davis at three. But I think more than ever, it's really near the top is where you want to be. I've always advocated being near the end to get those two great picks back to back. But I want, to me, the drop off from Trout or Miggy, maybe Goldschmidt or Davis to the next tier is considerable.
Yeah, and that's what you have to think about. Yep, absolutely. All right, so that's the offense for the All-Fantasy team for 2013. Let's take a look at our pitching staff. We have two starters with some honorable mentions and then a closer, of course, with some honorable mentions. I don't think there's going to be any surprise who the closer is. And there really should be no surprise who the starters are either. Clayton Kershaw and Scherzer. Scherzer gets his 21st win last night. I mean, these guys just had absolutely ridiculous ridiculous years, and you know, nice year for strikeouts too, up high. I mean, you know, looking at some big numbers here, Kershaw with 224 in 230 innings, Scherzer with 240 in 214 innings.
Crazy. I mean, you know, Kershaw, quote unquote, only 15 wins, but at that point, you don't care. 188 ERA. He'll be the first pitcher since what, Maddox or Pedro, to finish under two.
Yep.
0.92 whip for a starting pitcher throwing 230 innings. That's a category winning number right there. He gave up 11 home runs this year. In 230 innings, he gave up 11 home runs. Just insane. I mean, clear cut number one guy next year with Verlander struggling. With offense being kind of jumbled, there's a much easier argument to be made for taking Kershaw in the first round next year than there was for taking a starter this year. Scherzer, you know, 290 ERA, not to that level. But 21 wins, 240 Ks, as you said, 0.97 whip. I had him in Tout Wars last year, and he had a huge second half, big part of my championship last year. And this year validated that. I think he's established that level where maybe he's not an ace because you still view, you know, Verlander, Kershaw, guys like that. But he's right there. You know, he's a 1A, if not a 1.
Yep.
And honorable mentions, Adam Wainwright, great full season as we thought he would. 18 wins, 301 ERA, 214 Ks. Yu Darvish. 269 strikeouts in 204 innings. Insane.
And I think he has one more start. I think he pitches this weekend.
He's got the weekend. 13 wins, 107 whip, 282 ERA. And finally, Jose Fernandez.
Yeah,
I mean,
amazing.
you know, his 2.19 ERA and .98 WHIP, that's like Kershaw territory, but only 173 innings. On one hand, you're like, oh, I wish the guy had thrown more. On the other hand, you got him off the waiver wire in the first week probably, right. And you know, with the Marlins being out of it so early, you're kind of glad they shut him down, right. And you knew it was going to happen. So, unbelievably, you're probably Matt Harvey would have made an honorable mention sure. If not for the injury. He was on the same track. A lot of big years, but Kershaw and Scherzer, again, just in a separate tier from these other guys.
Absolutely, and that's really amazing to say because Wainwright had a really, really good year, and like you said with Darvish, 269 strikeouts, and he's going to get over 270. That's amazing. 270
strikeouts. No one's had 300 strikeouts in 10 years.
I know. It's kind of like the Steals thing, right?
Right.
Where these eye-popping numbers don't really come around that often anymore.
Yep.
At closer, the king is still the king. He really took over for Mariano a couple of years ago, and he's now held on to it. 3 straight 40 save seasons and just a boatload of strikeouts each year. And that's Craig Kimbrel, 4 wins, 1.25 ERA, 49 saves, so he'll crack 50 most likely. 96 strikeouts. He'll have 100 strikeouts most likely in under 70 innings and a sub-1 WHIP.
Kimbrel is, you know, he's the clear-cut number one guy off the board next year. You know, 4 wins is nice little gravy from a closer, too. Mm-hmm. But there's sort of 2 tiers of honorable mentions because the first honorable mention
has a very similar year.
Listen to this. Has the same ERA,
yep.
The same exact number of innings, a lower WHIP, .83 yep. to .89, more strikeouts. But 2 wins and 45 saves to 4-49. And again, you want to be the king, you got to beat the king.
Right.
But Greg Holland.
Amazing.
2 weeks into the season, Greg Holland was one more bad outing from losing his closer job.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on a roll. Kelvin Herrera started struggling. And
yep.
Greg Holland has been lights out for the last 5 months. On draft day in NFBC, I got a roll. This is my number one closer, mission accomplished. I had a hard choice for my second closer, and I ended up taking Sergio Romo.
Mm.
And the other guy I was considering was Greg Holland.
Yeah, I remember you liked Holland on
that. I loved Holland. I ended up getting him in a trade in Tout Wars right when he was struggling. Fred mm-hmm. Zinke and I made a deal, and I just wouldn't trade him. I mean, unbelievable year. He's basically Kimbrel of the American League.
Right.
High 90s fastball and an unbelievable wipeout breaking ball. And guess what? You know, the Royals, if they bring back their good pitching next year, maybe the hitting matures a little bit, he's going to do it again.
You mean bring back their good pitching like Big Irv?
There you go. Like Big Game James, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, Kimbrel, you know, in the past, this year I think there was an argument that if you didn't get Kimbrel or Aroldis, you were going to wait a little bit on closers this year. Not into the bottom tier where you were going for whoever was the closer in Houston or whatever. Next year, I think the elite tier is a little bit deeper, so you can justify waiting a little bit on taking your first closer. Other honorable mentions, Aroldis Chapman and Kenley Jansen. Kenley Jansen, you know, again, would have been right up with these guys if he'd had the closer job from the word go.
Right.
Still blows my mind that he didn't. Crazy numbers. Aroldis Chapman basically backed up what he did last year. ERA a little bit high because he was a little bit homer prone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
was
38,
it Chris DeNorfia?
112 strikeouts, 4 wins, 38 saves. Crazy numbers. But finally, look, man, you take this one.
Mariano?
Honorable mention this year, but greatest closer in history.
Yeah. 6 wins. But, you know, we know he had some pretty high-profile blown saves, but still, I mean, just think about, what he did. You have to throw the honorable mention, just 44 saves. You cannot just sneeze at that. You know, a .215 ERA, less than Aroldis Chapman by over a half run. By almost a half a run. So, you throw him on there as a tip of the cap. He still had a great year. He just didn't have...
And, you know,
he just didn't have, you know, what these guys are doing
the,
now. It's ridiculous.
The thing that's crazy is that some people might look at this year and say, wow, you know, it wasn't a great Mariano year. He had a .215 ERA,
yep.
a .107 WHIP, and 44 saves. And the funny thing is, you know, yet like you said, he blew a lot of saves. He ended up with 6 wins.
Yeah.
You know, look, those count.
Yep.
And for closers,
right.
you know, maybe it should have been 5-45 if everybody's mad at the Baltimore official score still. But, 6 wins, 44 saves, a .215 ERA, greatest closer ever. We'll never see another one like him.
Yep, and I will be heading out to the stadium tonight for his final home game. And
awesome.
I'm sure they'll be down 7 runs, and he'll come in the ninth. And
he's pitching tonight.
Yeah.
If there is one certainty in life, it's Mariano Rivera pitching tonight. They could be up 20-0. He's pitching.
Oh, they could
be down 20-0. He's going to be pitching.
The way it's going, they'll probably be down 20-0. They'll probably be down 10-0 in the first inning. They should just let him pitch the final 3 innings.
Well, there's been talk, actually, that he wants to play outfield.
Right, but they won't do that tonight because the Rays game is
Rays are competing.
It's too important. It's an insult to the playoffs.
But if it's a 10-0 game, does he play center field in the ninth inning?
I think there's a chance. If they're up or down a lot of runs, I think there's a chance.
See, I think there's the better chance that he's pitching the ninth tonight. You got to do the Enter Sandman. You got to do the entrance.
Well, you can't
the whole
do that
thing.
If he's in the outfield.
Right.
Well, you can.
He'll play the outfield.
He just runs a little less.
He'll play the outfield in Houston.
I think.
Because they have three games there. Both teams are out of it. Yep. But here's the concern. He's always said he wanted to play center field.
Right.
Right?
Towse Hill.
Do you want him going near that? If it's over your head, just let it go. Right?
If he gets hurt, so what?
Yeah, but he's still. Yeah, but he's still a person, Mike.
But I'm just saying,
43-year-old guy.
But I'm saying, what could possibly happen to him so bad that some minor surgery and a little rehab, and he's just back to.
Well, let me put it this way:
it's not like he needs to get in baseball shape ever again.
No, but
he just needs to get in walking to the mailbox.
Yeah,
shape.
It's got
to
be living the rest of your life shape. He's 43 years old.
What do you think? Come on. The guy came back from what looked very bad in Kansas City.
To pitch again this year.
Yes.
To pitch in the major leagues.
Right, so he doesn't have to pitch in the major leagues next year.
I would rather see him in left.
He has to mow the lawn.
I'd rather see him in left. Gardner could play a center. I'd rather see him
in
left.
You know what they should do? They should remove Towse Hill. This is the greatest closer of all time.
Are you bringing back...
That wants to play center field.
You are channeling Seth Everett now.
I'm being sarcastic.
Take down that hill. Remember the Seth Everett campaign? Right. Anyway, come on.
Anyway.
That's our team. Let me rattle them off real quick.
I don't have a problem with the hill. It's just funny.
Yadi Molina behind the plate. Davis, Cano, Miggy, and Segura on the infield. Trout, Ellsbury, and McCutcheon in the outfield. Kershaw and Scherzer, your top two starters. Craig Kimbrell, your closer. The 2013 MLB.com Fantasy 411 All-Fantasy Team. Congratulations, men. You've earned it.
Okay, there you go.
That's the first half of the show.
And again, if you go back to the blog, fantasy411.mlblogs.com, you will see that the Goose has posted all of this stuff. Feel free to chime in with some comments, and the Goose could be condescending and reply back. Or go Corey if he really wants to. But obviously a lot of room for argument with our picks, but you know what? So close, we have to pick somebody. All right, Fan Appreciation Day as well. We solicited questions on the blog at fantasy411.mlb.com, .mlblogs.com, and on the Twitter machine at fantasy411. Let's go to the blog first. This is from Cliff. 14-team mix head-to-head, 5x5 with OBP instead of average. I have Hosmer as a keeper in the 14th. I've always drafted position scarcity first in my leagues when it comes to offense. When you're drafting around your keepers, how often do you try and fill in other positions? Or do you go for best player, regardless of position? For example, in my case, grabbing a shortstop or third baseman early, relying on Hosmer first, or grabbing a better first baseman with 4 to 5 category potential and plugging Hosmer into the utility.
I think, in any league, you're always going to go for the best player that you can get with those first couple of rounds. You want to get ROI. And if you have a tough choice to make, you use the position as the tiebreaker. And that's what led me to take Wright over Goldschmidt in NFBC, which was a tactical mistake because I had Miggy, but that was my thinking. So I'll apply that better next time. But I don't have a problem at all keeping Hosmer 14th round, huge value, 14-team league. Is he a top 14 first baseman? I think he is, definitely. Mm-hmm. OBP versus average doesn't help him much because he doesn't draw a ton of walks. But I think he's definitely can carry the first base spot. If you end up putting him in as your corner spot, you're really ahead of the game. But let's put it this way. If you end up with the third pick, and remember, it's a keeper league. Let's say you get the third pick and Chris Davis is on the board. Mm-hmm. You're taking him, and you'll move Hosmer to the corner.
Right.
That's a nice problem to have.
Yeah,
but you're not going to pass a better player with the thought of what you might do 14 rounds from now.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think, I'm 1 year in 4-on-1 league. Remember, I think that was me that I had the wheel or near
second
the wheel.
Second base, second base.
I won Pedroia Kinsler.
Yep.
They were the two best players available. They were superstar, potential superstar years. And I had utility and I had middle infield, so why not?
Yep.
I think that applies here. And I'll tell you one thing, and I do this a lot, but because it's a lot easier to do it for me because it's fresher. I had C.J. Spiller in my as a keeper in my fantasy league this year. Now, C.J. Spiller was going in the top 5 ADP for the most part in fantasy football. And instead of, I went with position scarcity, which was running back. So I had him in the 5th round, very similar to what this question is by Cliff. So I went with position scarcity, and I took Megatron with my first pick, the 11th pick in the first round, but I went back to running back on the wheel. And that was an enormous mistake. Again, this is all hindsight. I took David Wilson, who's been a bust so far, and so a Spiller. But anyway, long story short, I could have had Calvin Johnson and Jimmy Graham But because I was so, and yeah, tight end obviously is position scarcity, but if I went best player available, I would be having a much different season than if I would have won position scarcity. So yeah. I think you always have to go best player available and do what Corey said is don't think about 14 rounds later. You know, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Zach, is this the goose? 5x5, 12 team that uses quality starts and OPS can keep four from this group. Okay, Cano, Beltre, Carlos Gomez, Freddie Freeman. Oh, interesting. They're side by side. Alfonso Soriano, Starling Marte, Carlos Santana, David Price. 5x5, 12 team.
Well, Cano and Beltre are slam dunks.
Yep.
We don't need to worry about too much about that. You know, I like David Price. He had a huge second half, totally, you know, revitalized his value. He's probably in the ace tier or right behind it next year. For me, it comes down to Freeman or Marte. I don't think you can count on Alfonso Soriano repeating. Carlos Santana, as much as I like him, had a good year but not a great year. The format favors Santana because he's a catcher who draws 90 walks. So that helps him from the OPS standpoint. Sure. But to me, it comes down to Freeman versus Marte. You know, you might think, well, you know, Marte, this format hurts him because he's not a big OBP guy. But don't forget, a lot of doubles, a lot of triples, a lot of homers, that brings up the slugging and helps maintain the higher OPS. And we saw already yesterday, three steals in one game as soon as he comes back to the lineup, 40 for the year. I like his all-around game. If you want to make an argument for Freeman, I get it, but I'm taking Marte. And Carlos Gomez, I mean, again, OBP, that hurts him in this format, but 23 homers, 37 steals, 280 average, you live with the low OBP.
Okay. Moving along, we have Dan here. Got Kipnis in a keeper after trading E5 for him halfway through the year. Now I've got a very sour taste in my mouth from what Kipnis has given me in the second half, so I don't want to act impulsively. Can't forget what he did first half. I'm tempted to offer the trade reverse in the offseason to get E5 back. Wanted to see if you think it's worth doing. E5 signed through 2014 at $8. Kipnis can be signed this offseason for 1 year at 9, 2 years at 12, 3 years at 14. Flexibility with Kipnis, better price and player for 1 year at E5. Tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at what Kipnis did in the second half, definitely faded a little bit, but he ended up with a season comparable to or slightly better than 2012. So I think that validates his value. But the same thing can be said of Encarnacion. Even with the September injury, you know, he didn't equal last year's numbers, but I think he established that he is that player. And I think in a scratch draft next year, he probably goes ahead of Kipnis by a round or a half round, something like that. So basically for the same price, you get a somewhat better player. And I understand the long-term value in Kipnis, but I wanted to win in 2013. And when I sit down to draft next year, I want to win in 2014. So if you think Encarnacion for $8 gives you the better chance of doing that, that's your guy.
All right, let's hear from Rob. Keeper outfield question. Assuming all are healthy and have a starting job next year, who will be the most valuable? Adam Spanky Eaton, Tavares, or Yelich?
Tough choice. A lot to like here. You know, the assuming all are healthy and have a starting job is a big assumption. You know, Tavares in particular is the question mark here because I think Beltran is a free agent. That would presumably open up right field for Tavares in St. Louis. But with the ankle problems, not really having a great year this year, you know, long term, I think he projects as the best of these guys. But for next year, I might take Yelich. I think he showed enough, you know, in a weak lineup in a tough hitter's park and still put up numbers that he can give you 15 homers and 30 steals next year, and I think that might be your guy. I mean, look, there's a lot to like about all these guys, but Yelich impressed me this year. I didn't think he would do this well in that environment.
Yeah, that's a good point. Adam writes, 12-team mix, Roto can keep four. Here are my choices. Freddie Freeman at 13, Machado at 3, Cespedes at 8, Pedro Alvarez at 7, Kenley Jansen at 3, Desmond Jennings at 11, and Anibal at 11.
You know, tough choices here. Two slam dunks to me. Cespedes for 8.
Yep.
You know, the batting average dropped this year, but the power was there. I think when the average bounces back a little bit next year, he could be, you know, a 280, 30 homer guy. And Kenley Jansen for $3. I mean, it's going to be...
You don't think Machado, too?
Well, hold on. Cespedes and Kenley, to me, are slam dunks. Machado at 3, I think, is a consideration, as is Alvarez at 7. I think, to me, the four bats are all good considerations. Des Jennings disappointing this year, didn't steal. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
You know, Freeman, big step forward, but still, you know, 23 homers is not a ton for a first baseman, even with everything else he brings. You know, Machado and Alvarez, you know, do you take Alvarez and balance it out with Freeman before the batting average? You know,
I don't know. I mean, you can get Machado and Alvarez and you know, kind of
not have to worry about first base.
Dominate, yeah, there. And you get them combined for less than Freeman. You get them combined for less than Desmond Jennings.
True, but to go into your draft with Machado, Cespedes, and Alvarez, who might between them hit 260
or 270, mm-hmm. you're giving up a lot of ground in one category, and you've got to draft the high average guys right. to balance that
that's
out.
True.
You know, I'm not, you know, there's no perfect answer here, but that's a big concern. Whereas Freeman, you know, let's say for argument's sake, you keep Freeman and Jennings, more expensive, but you know you get power, speed, and average. You know, if you keep Alvarez and Freeman, you get a ton of power, you fix the average problem, but you've got to make up the speed later. Considerations, you know?
Yeah. All right, so...
But I see Machado, Alvarez, totally, yeah.
All right, so our final picks are Machado, Cespedes, Alvarez, Jansen, if this was your team?
That's interesting. That might be fun. Let's hope Machado comes back healthy next year.
I think he will.
All right, let's hope.
All right, Tampa Pete, who never left. He listened to us all year. Hey, Tampa Pete, what's up, man? Which four would you keep in a 9-team NL only? Bumgarner, Castro, Marte, Minor, Fernandez, Latos, Rizzo.
Nice problem to have, huh?
Wow.
Look, Madison Bumgarner, you've got to take. In an NL only league, he's an ace, and you can't let go of Jose Fernandez.
No.
You know, I don't like to keep pitchers over hitters, but these guys, to me, are the two best names on the list. Starling Marte, as we just talked about, is probably going to be a fourth or fifth round player in scratch drafts next year, mixed. In a 9-team NL only, I think he's your guy. Castro fell off the map. All disappointment guy.
Ugh.
Hard to justify. Mike Minor had a nice year. Latos had a nice year. Rizzo was disappointing. I think out of those four, I don't want to keep three arms, but, you know, Latos looks like the best choice because he's established a level that if you keep Bumgarner, Fernandez, and Latos as your top three in an NL only league,
you can go real heavy on offense.
Right. You don't need to worry about a starter for a while. So,
yeah.
I might go that way.
Yeah.
I generally take the bats, but these starters to me are just clear-cut better choices.
I totally agree. I go Bumgarner, Marte, Fernandez, and Latos. I don't really think there's any question about it.
There you go.
All right. So thanks to Tampa Pete for the question. All right, let's switch over to the tweets that you sent in to @fantasy411. This is Eric Sko 2T1982. Keep four. Fielder, Longoria, Stanton, Harper, Machado, Jose Fernandez, there he is again,
mm-hmm.
Harvey, and more.
Well, you know, a lot of people are going to knock Prince Fielder for what he did this year, but he's going to end up in the 280s, 25, 27 homers, 110 RBIs. With power being on decline in baseball, I still think he's a top round keeper. Same with Evan Longoria. Disappointing year, 31 homers,
yeah.
80 RBIs,
yeah.
Third base, got to keep him. Harper and Stanton, you know, are both going to end up as disappointments this year because of the injuries. They didn't play a lot of games, but they kind of did sort of what you would expect them to do. Given the playing time they had, you know, it's tough to let go of those guys. Again, keep four. Are they top four picks next year? Top four round picks? Absolutely.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
But so are Fernandez and Moore and Harvey. So I'm keeping the first four hitters on your list.
Harvey's not going in the top first four.
You get my. He's going to be a very, very well. Again, with the injury risk, he'll slip. But I'm keeping the top four bats: Fielder, Longoria, Stanton, Harper. Probably Matt Moore over Fernandez because. You know, again, the advantage of having one more full season
mm-hmm.
than Fernandez. But I think those first four hitters for me would be the choice.
And here's something that everybody needs to remember, especially Eric. Okay, you keep the four bats and these arms go back in. You get a pick in the fifth round, which now becomes the first round.
Right, exactly.
You can get Jose Fernandez back.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, so there will be big-time pitchers there.
Yep.
Only 48 guys are coming off the board. Let's assume it's a 12-team league. If it's a 10-team league, only 40 guys are coming off, so you're fine. So I agree. Let's go with those four bats. @BWAMPS. Keep five in a 10-team mix, 260 budget. Braun at 39, Miggy at 33, Kemp at 28, Pedroia at 24, Freeman at 23, Price at 19, and there he is again, Jose Fernandez, 6.
Okay, well, Fernandez is the slam dunk in this group at 6,
yep.
along with Miggy Cabrera at 33.
Yep.
Remember, 10-team league, that's fewer dollars but greater inflation on the top guys.
Right.
Braun 39 and Kemp 28, I think you have to let those guys go just because there's too much risk and uncertainty about them.
Yep.
You know, arguably Kemp has a better chance of earning it next year, but
you can probably get him back at that price.
He had 6 homers and 9 steals this year. You're not keeping a guy who, for $28, you're not keeping a guy who had 6 homers and 9 steals unless he did it like in a month.
Yeah.
You know, so then it comes down to Pedroia, Freeman, Price.
Pick
Pedroia
two.
Versus Freeman for the price, you know, for the cost, I would keep Pedroia.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't come back with the power this year, but every other part of his game is still there. Second base, weak position. And Price for 19, you know, he turned it on in the second half big
sure
time.
Did.
I think he's an ace. So Cabrera, Pedroia, Price, Fernandez to me is the list.
I'm with you on that one. @DaveDeuces. That's a nice Vegas name. Dave Deuces. Who's the better keeper for next season, Verlander or Jose Fernandez? Goose, I sense a theme.
Yeah, you know, here comes another one. The problem I have with starting pitching is that there's too much of an assumption that guys will bounce back. You know, well, Verlander's been an ace for so long. He had a down year this year, but he'll bounce back next year. You know, age, stress on the arm, decline, loss of velocity, whatever it may be. Once a starting pitcher goes into decline, I'm almost writing him off. Now, I don't want to be guilty either of going for the flavor of the month guy in Fernandez, but who's got the better chance of, you know, you could say by the Ron Chandler extreme regression theory next year, Verlander's got the better chance of bouncing back, but was he ever as good as those two insane years he had back-to-back? So maybe he's somewhat better, but if Fernandez gives you back 20% of his performance and Verlander gains 20% on his performance, Fernandez is the guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, I'm always conservative when it comes to starting pitching, so I'm going to assume Verlander doesn't earn it next year.
All right, there you go.
I hate to say that.
Yeah, it's crazy, but hey, we've seen some very interesting things this year that make that,
you know,
a very
2 years ago,
scene.
Oh, yeah. Would you take Verlander or Halliday, or would you wait a little bit and take Kershaw or CeCe? Only one of those guys left standing right now.
Good point.
Steven Strasburg, everybody's, you know, mm-hmm. in the argument for number one starting pitcher this year, had 7 wins.
Yep.
7 wins, Mike. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a bad year. He had a great year.
Yeah.
7 wins. Mariano Rivera had 6.
He earned those. He earned those by blowing those saves. At the crappy totals.
I love that.
Keep Yaziel Puig or Jose Fernandez? Can only keep one.
All right. Now, you know, again, now we've got 2 flavors of the month. So now I don't feel so bad for picking one over the other. You can't say I'm a bandwagon guy, right? Puig, power speed combination, you know, the league adjusted to him at one point over the summer. He made the adjustment back. Now he's having a little bit of slow September. But let's say he disappoints you next year with 25 homers and 15 steals. That's the guy for me.
Okay. Absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, some people were surprised. Somebody asked me in the office, Puig or Freddie Freeman? And at this time, I think Puig was kind of a little banged up, slowing down. He was still kind of still very an unknown, and Freeman was rocking and rolling. But there's a lot to like there. And there's really no reason I think some guys, especially some of these free-swinging guys, sometimes they hit such bad stuff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How are you supposed to find the hole
right
when the guy hits, you know, the weirdest stuff anyway?
Yeah, you don't want to make unfair comparisons, no. But, you know, Alfonso Soriano and Vladimir Guerrero are just 2 guys off the top of my head that, I mean, it's not that they didn't control the strike zone. They didn't have a strike zone.
No, they didn't. You're right.
You know?
You're absolutely right.
And had very good careers. You know, talking about guys like Starling Marte, you know, John Segura, 3.5-1 strikeout to walk rate. Willen Rosario, 7-1 strikeout to walk rate. You know, an honorable mention, all fantasy catcher. Adam Jones, year after year after year, 5-1 strikeout to walk rate, 285, 32 homers. So I'm becoming a little bit less rigid or stringent in looking at that metric as I used to. So I go with Puig.
Okay, I'm with you. So finally, Jose Fernandez not getting love. It took the Yasiel.
He got love over Verlander, though.
He did.
And we kept him for $6.
Well, I said finally not, because he got it everywhere else.
Yeah, some.
At Angry Elvis, thoughts on ending the fantasy season early, a la football, since players get shut down and playing time gets random?
I don't like it, and I'll tell you why.
I don't like it either, but you're going to go first.
If the major leaguers can play 162 games, so can we. And that's why I like the roto format over head-to-head, mm-hmm. because it rewards the teams that are the best over the long haul, mm-hmm. including the last week, 2-3 weeks of the season, when playing time gets scarce. You've got to do your homework. You know, in NFBC this week, I was looking at pitching matchups. Are my guys going to get shut down? Are my pitchers on Saturday and Sunday going to get scratched? Is it going to be a one-start week instead of two? Who's banged up? Who might sit out the last week? Start, you know, I've had Dexter Fowler on the bench. I could have cut him this week if I had any free agent money, because I know he's shut down now. Segura's shut down. Those are the guys that got you here, but you need to run through the tape and finish the season. This is a 26-weeks grind. As Kirk Gibson called it, Mike, it's the beast. You want to be the champion, you got to slay the beast.
And I'll agree with you, and also take it to a different angle, is don't ever kid yourself about how much these guys look at the back of their baseball cards.
Right.
You ever heard of arbitration and free agency?
Oh, yeah.
These guys go out. I don't care. I mean, watch some of the games. Watch the Mariners this week. They were, like, Michael Saunders hitting the ball over the place, getting really aggravated and almost tossed for striking out. These guys do play. These guys do play. If they weren't, they would just sit there and not take the bat off their shoulder. And in the year I lost Tout Wars on the 163rd game of the season, the reason I lost was on Sunday. Lorne Michaels' team hit seven homers. Seven homers. Think about that. His team hit seven homers in one day. So guys are producing all the way to the end. Now, yes, do guys sit down? Absolutely. Do pitchers get shut down? Absolutely. But that's where your homework comes in. You know who the rookies are. You know in May, Jose Fernandez is probably going to get shut down. You know, we knew about Felix Fernandez a couple years ago. But that's a couple of guys. I mean, that's small sample size. Does Ryan Flaherty hitting two homers yesterday help you? No. Maybe in the most random of AL-only leagues, yeah. Right? But those are very small sample sizes. You have to understand that these guys are going out and that are not on playoff-bound teams, and they're playing. You know why? Because they have nothing to do next week. Why not go all out? In football, these guys have things to do. They still have to play in the playoffs.
You know, bad teams, those guys are playing for jobs.
Absolutely.
You know, the best example I can always think of, Bobby Abreu, the year he was with the Yankees, went into the last game of the season with 99 RBIs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Made a couple of outs his first couple of times up, and then I think he came up like in the seventh inning with the bases loaded and one out. Hits a chopper to second base, and I don't remember who the guy was that was on first, but he busted down to second base and went in hard to second base like it was the seventh game of the World Series.
Yep.
Annihilated the second baseman, and I guess it was probably Brian Roberts, or maybe the shortstop, I don't remember at the time, who somehow got off the throw, and Abreu beats it by a step to get the 100th RBI on the force out. They showed the dugout, the guys went crazy. This was when the Yankees were like, not just a good team every year, but like you just assumed they were going to the postseason every year. These guys started jumping up and down like they just won their fourth World Series in 5 years over Bobby Abreu's 100th RBI on the last day of the season. Yeah. They care, guys.
And think about it. I mean, you know, Royals were playing for their lives yesterday and got shut out. Mariners were playing for nothing. Scored six runs. Iwakuma had a great... You know what I mean? Like, it goes on and on and on. And never underestimate the value of a round number.
Probably should have given Iwakuma an honorable mention, too.
There you go. And there it is.
We just added him.
Speaking of honorable mentions and thank yous, Corey, please rattle off our guests from this year.
Right,
did a great job on the Friday show.
They sure did. Thank you so much to JB for doing the Friday shows with me and to our great guests. You know, I have to admit, I didn't make the list before we came in here, but I think I got everybody in no particular order. Joe Sheehan, Nando DeFino, Jason Collette, Jeff Erickson, Ron Chandler, Derek Carty, Paul Spohr, Steve Gardner, Eric Mack, Hey Kay Adams, Lord Todd Zola, Laura Michaels, and Jason Parks. It was his birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday.
If I forgot anybody, I apologize deeply and sincerely, but I thank you all for being on the show this year. And folks, if you're new to the podcast, rewind, write down this list of names, and check these people out. They know their stuff, and they are good people, and they can help you win your leagues, and that's what we're here to do.
Yep, and don't forget, as we've been the last couple months or shows, I should say, Ron Chandler at ronchandler.com. It looks like this monthly league stuff may stick for next year, and check him out on First Pitch Arizona, and then First Pitch Offseason when in the cold weather cities, and then, of course, Matthew Berry's book, great book about the life and times of fantasy baseball players out there as well.
Awesome stuff.
Earlier this year on draft day at Tout, right before it, Matthew Berry announced his retirement from Trout.
From Mike Trout?
He retired
I think Chandler's
from Mike
retiring from Mike Trout.
Yeah, Chandler retired from Mike Trout. Matthew Berry retired from Tout.
Okay.
So he's going to focus more on what he does. You see him every Sunday, obviously, for football season, and you'd be surprised how that's almost a yearly job for him. I'm going to follow suit. And I am 99.6% sure that I am retiring from Tout Wars after this season, which has nothing to do with where I finished in the standings, and which was very terrible and low. But I actually liked my team when I walked out of the room that day, so there you go. Retiring from Tout, and most likely 99.6.5% chance that I am done with the podcast. So I wanted to thank my great partner to my left, who always has been to my left for some reason. What is that all about?
It's just the way it works out, man. Left brain.
For being a great partner all these years. We had a lot of fun. But I think it's time for me to kind of get out of the fantasy business. I'm not as into it as I used to be. And if I can't put 100% into something, I'm not the type of person that wants to do it. I really don't like going through the motions. I think I'm going to stick around for the 4-1-1 Listener League because I really enjoy that. And I like playing with the shortstops and all the great friends we made there, like Mitch and everybody. And all that stuff. And Goose will still be doing the blog and all that next year. But I'm pretty much done.
Well, the way I look at it, Mike, is, you know, like Koufax, like Mariano, like Barry Sanders, I think you're going out on top.
Maybe in the standings I was going out on top.
You might not be a champion in the standings, but you know what? In my book, you're a winner.
Well, thank you, sir.
And, this has been an awesome run. And, you know, I think it's also a good time to point out to, you know, again,
hopefully we're still building an audience doing this show, but mm-hmm. the Fantasy 411 goes back to way before you and I were doing it. We've had some great people on the show.
Lenny and Irwin.
The guests we mentioned, Lenny and Irwin started out, Greg Clayman and Pat DePiro in the early days, mm-hmm. Casey Stern, mm-hmm. Pete McCarthy, doing the TV show on the MLB Network with Joe Sheehan and Nando DeFino making mm-hmm. regular appearances, mm-hmm. and Jeff Nelson and Jim Duquette. You know, the 411 is a brand. It's a way of approaching fantasy baseball. It's a way of having fun and you know, bringing your regular life and all the things you like to do together, whether we goof around about, you know, music or listening to 24, you know, watching the TV show 24 and talking about Jack Bauer, making Chuck Norris jokes. You know, we try and have fun, and we've managed to do that for a long time, and we'll miss you, but we'll keep trying to have fun.
I appreciate that, brother.
You got it, man.
I appreciate that. So that'll do it for this edition and maybe the final edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411.
It's a cliffhanger.